Saturday, November 23rd, the second dark day. As if joining in the country's grief, dark clouds hung low over Washington. Rain mingling with the tears of a nation, a world. The world awoke slowly, painfully this day, hoping, praying, that the events of yesterday had in some way been just a horrible nightmare. But all you had to do was turn on the radio, listen for a moment to the terse reports coming in from Dallas, from Washington, and this prayer, this hope, somehow became a terrible mockery. This is WQMR newsman Bill Doty. It was my job to cover the Saturday news beat, to relay to our listeners the events of this day as they unfolded. For Jacqueline Kennedy, this day began in the pre-dawn hours at Bethesda Naval Hospital. It was here the late president's body had been taken the night before for embalming. At 4:30 Saturday morning, Mrs. Kennedy, still wearing the blood-stained clothes she had worn from Dallas, accompanied the body of her husband as they left the hospital to make their final trip to the White House together. In the east room of the White House, John F. Kennedy's body, in a flag-draped coffin, lay in repose, flanked by a guard of five men. A private mass for immediate members of the family was held at 10:30. After that, John Fitzgerald Kennedy belonged to the world, as throughout this gloomy Saturday, a host of dignitaries entered the White House to pay their respects to their departed leader. The procession of limousines rolling up to the White House carried such men as Dwight Eisenhower, Harry Truman, Senate GOP leader Everett Dirksen, New York Governor Nelson Rockefeller, even Alabama's Governor George Wallace was there. But even as this procession of grieving notables was entering the White House, plans were underway for the public to pay its respects. On Sunday, the body of John F. Kennedy was to be carried up Pennsylvania Avenue on a caisson drawn by seven horses to the Capitol, there to lie in state in the huge rotunda. Thousands would be lining the route of the cortege, but for the millions who would not be able to be there in person, preparations were being made this day, this Saturday, to broadcast a description of the sorrowful procession. WQMR set up seven vantage points, stretching from near the White House to the Capitol Rotunda. Meanwhile, in Dallas, on this Saturday, November 23rd, the case was building up against the president's accused assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, though at this point the case against Oswald was circumstantial. One major clue, the rifle, which was sent to Washington for examination. Oswald's Russian-born wife, Marina, told police her husband owned such a weapon. Furthermore, it was revealed the FBI had in their possession a letter sent to a Chicago mail-order house earlier in the year ordering a rifle similar to the murder weapon. According to the FBI, the handwriting in the letter was that of Oswald's. Dallas police were claiming the case was a cinch, although throughout the long hours of grilling, the meek-voiced Oswald denied killing anyone. Listen closely now and hear the actual voice of Lee Oswald as he answered reporters in the hallway of the Dallas jail.
I really don't know what the situation is about. Nobody has told me anything. I'm accused of murdering a police officer. I know nothing more than that, and I do request for someone to come forward to give me a legal assistance.
Did you kill the president?
No, I've not been charged with that. In fact, nobody has said that to me yet. The first thing I heard about was when the newspaper reporters in the hall asked me that question.
You have been
charged. Nobody said what?
Sir?
You have been.
The 35th president of the United States lay in repose in the White House. His accused assassin prepared for his second night in a Dallas jail. And so came to an end, Saturday, November 23rd, 1963, the second dark day.